You're listening to episode 5 of 88 Cups of Tea with Yin Chang.
Am I doing this right? Hi, I'm your host, Yin Chang, and thanks for joining me on 88 Cups of Tea. This podcast is created to leave you feeling motivated from interviews with storytellers, where we learn how they create opportunities for a successful career without losing sight of the values that make us human. Whew, that was a really long run-on sentence.
Hi guys, this is a temporary placeholder for the perfect sponsor. I'm excited to partner with a company that I genuinely believe in and stand firmly by their message and products. If you're interested in sponsoring my show and you believe your brand can truly be of value and of service to me and my tribe, reach out to me on my contact page at 88cupsoftea.com and let's chat.
Hey guys, today I have a very special guest, my really close and dear friend of mine, Liwa Nasruddin. He's been there for me through a lot of things, heard about heartbreaks and new relationships, so this one's a really special interview for me. Liwa, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me on this. I'm really excited.
I'd like to start off and ask you, Liwa, what makes a person a writer?
See, that's such an interesting question because I do feel like it's a thing that everyone really struggles with. At what point do you consider yourself a writer? Is it when services are rendered? Is it when you're seeing yourself on television or on movies? And the fact of the matter is the thing that really separates people who make it and people who don't are an inherent belief in themselves. And not to suggest that there isn't doubt that's going to seep through, but really how you present yourself is so critical in any art. For me, it's when you define it for yourself. At first, I started to say, okay, I was a filmmaker. But the reality is the difference between when I was quote unquote a writer, it happened in one day. I wrote a script because I thought, okay, I wanted to direct something. And then all of a sudden that script kind of was passed around. And then all of a sudden people were calling me a writer. And I think it's really important that you don't give that power away. Going back in my own career, I wish I started off by saying, you know what, I am a writer, because I was. I was a writer the second I sat down and started writing that script. I didn't become it because I was validated by a script sale or a script being optioned. And I think there's a lot of confidence in being able to say that, but I also think there's a responsibility to say that because I've also been in a situation where people are claiming to be writers and haven't written anything. So I think it is definitely a title you have to give yourself, and you also have to weigh what that responsibility means to oneself. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how do you feel about fake it till you make it?
I think you have to unpack the phrase a little. I think faking it until you make it is really important because I think what it's really saying is that you want to believe in yourself.
Right, like owning it.
Owning it and knowing that it's something that you're pursuing. There's a difference between just faking it, you know what I mean? And that's something that kind of really bothers me because you have people who will talk a bigger game or not put in the work. But I definitely think fake it till you make it is really just saying have confidence in your voice. And that's crucial because the reality is it's not a meritocracy. It's not the most talented person that makes it. It's the person who has a voice, who's able to articulate the voice and make someone feel confident. And that's all confidence. So if you don't have it right now because you feel like you need to be validated or whatever that may be, it's really important to put yourself in a situation where you feel like if I don't have it now, it's something I'm working towards and I have to not deny myself. And so when it comes to fake it till you make it, I think there's definitely validity to that.
As long as the intentions are true, I think, and being authentic with the word fake it. There are a lot of people out there who do think fake it till you make it and then there's not much there for them to show. A lot of talk and not so much walk.
And that's the scary thing, is that fake it till you make it means do the walk and talk. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And people think confidence means they have to know everything. It's not the case. There's a lot of times where, let's say I've been in way over my head, and that's happened in my career 100 times. What I'll hook into are certain things that I just know I could do well. For example, if I'm writing the first draft of a script and I'm going in and having a conversation with the producer, I might know intuitively that the script's not there and I can kind of bullshit my way through it. Or what I could do is talk about the things that really excite me in the script that maybe aren't fully realized yet. But the way that I'm kind of faking it till I'm making it is hooking into things that are really real for me. And I could see, like, as an audition, you know, how do you make it personal to you? Like what you're saying, it's coming from an authentic place. We have such pressure to go in and knock it out of the park and be incredible and to be amazing. And sometimes you don't need to be everything. You just have to find interesting ways to make it authentic for you.
Exactly. Find some truth in it. I love that. Thank you for that. Tell us a
little bit about how you got into writing. I know you are a jack of all trades. You are honestly, you're always so amazing at everything, and it's so inspiring. Please let our listeners know a little bit about your background, how you got into writing, what inspired you to get into that.
What happened with me, like ever since I was a kid, like I grew up, my dad was much older, and there was like a cultural and a generational gap. And I just remember we would sit down and watch like Married with Children or Three's Companies. So it's really interesting to come full circle and kind of be writing on these shows that now my dad watches, like writing on the Goldbergs and having him watch it is just really, because for us, that was our bonding experience. And comedy especially is so universal that it really broke down a lot of those gaps that had happened between my father and I, just because I was so young and he was older. So I think because I had that relationship with my father, having television, it meant a lot more to me. I found it as like my way in. It was my connection. So I always had that. I loved art. I always loved drawing. For me, I was just like, I remembered I just wanted to be a filmmaker. And my dad was always like, you should be a journalist. And I remember I was like, I did not want to be a journalist. So it's a long answer to your question. But what had happened was I originally started as a producer. And I remember I got out of high school and I've always looked like I was 44 years old. So I remember I was in high school and there was like this producer's immersion program in Canada and in the province that I lived in. And I remember thinking like, I need to get there because if I go to school and I get something, maybe I can go in and start producing stuff. I was like 17 at the time. I completely bullshitted my way into this program because it was for advanced producers. And I said I had my own show and just completely lied.
Wow.
The funny thing is in hindsight, like I thought I was this like smooth talking Robert Downey Jr. They totally knew I was bullshitting. You know, they really stressed just like the miracle it was about getting a movie off the ground and getting a television show. And I remember like our first assignment was like, raise $1 million, go to all of these government and these grants and see how you could raise this money. And I was like, oh my God.
Wow.
But it was such a blessing because what it did was it allowed me to look at the artistry through a producer's lens. And it really helped me to be like, okay, what are the projects that really excite me? And then from there, I got into film school. In film school, I decided, okay, I wanted to be a director and I have this producing background. And then when it came to being a writer, my fourth year in film school, I wanted to direct a feature film, but there were just no scripts that really got me excited. We were a small class, so there were only two or three writers. So I just decided, you know what, I'm going to write something. And I wrote something and I gave it to my professors. And I remember I was really headstrong in my youth, Yin. I was quite headstrong. And I remember my teacher talking to me and was kind of like, well, I just want to make sure that you wrote this. And was like, got it. But it was great. And then another teacher got up and shook my hand. And I was like, oh, wow. And he really was very generous with his thoughts and with his compliments. It meant a lot to me at the time. And he was like, I think you should try to get this made. And I sent it to a local producer who had done a bunch of stuff. He got like 3 Emmys. And I thought, this is such a long shot. And I sent that script to him. It was called Fall. And I remember calling and pretending I was my own agent. And I was like, yeah, the script is great. And you got to read this. And I kept hammering the guy. And then finally, he called back. And he's like, yeah, I'm going to Hawaii. Can you send me that script? And I was like, who is this? And I was, oh, fuck. And then I was like, so I sent him the script and I thought I was never going to hear from it again. And then I got a call in Hawaii. He was on his honeymoon and he called and he said, I'm picking this up.
Wow.
And I just remember thinking like, wow, I guess I'm a writer. You know, to have the thing is like, no, I was a writer. The second I thought, you know what, I'm going to commit this to paper. I'm going to tell this story. You know, the thing that's most intimate to you is really what's most universal.
On that topic, I hear a lot where there are some writing teachers out there who do really believe in writing for the commercial audience. Write what people will buy tickets for and watch.
I think it's such an old model. You know, I think when teachers are saying that, it's really important too, to realize where you're getting your advice from, because the industry has changed so much, because now there's so many different channels to get your work seen. You know, a lot of times people say like, write what the masses want to see. Well, yeah, well now with YouTube, with Amazon, with Hulu, with VOD, with like, there are so many channels that actually what people want are niche, because there's such an overload. And that the more specific you can be, you're more able to refine your voice. I mean, if you told Wes Anderson to make the most commercial movie, it wouldn't be Wes Anderson. There's specificity to taste. And yeah, I always shy away from that. Unless you're somebody who loves writing the big action stuff, and that is the thing that's most authentic to you, and you should go and do that. Do you know what I mean? Like, you want to write that. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. If that speaks true to them, great. But if they find any resistance towards it, where they're literally sitting down and they're like, oh gosh, oh, I'm not really feeling this.
this, but I have to get this movie made. And the only way it's going to be made is if I listen to the studio and change it to what they want. You know, I think it's so hard because it's like you're stuck in that mindset of thinking, well, I want to survive doing what I love to do. You need to get the bills paid too. So it's tricky. It's a definitely a sensitive topic, I think, where some people might think it's like selling out if you do end up writing specifically for the commercial audience rather than for yourself and sticking true to what it is that you believe in, and you're fighting to like keep that main character exactly how you want them to be rather than how the big studio head is like, no, I want you to change the intentions, you know?
It's definitely hard. And it's definitely hard. And the other thing though too is it's really interesting too, because we're talking about art, but the other thing is this is such a collaborative industry, especially like film, where you have a responsibility. You have to be able to stay true to your vision while enrolling the people around you. And that is the most important ability to have, because you're not always going to agree with someone's note, but your job is to enroll them in the best version of the story. And sometimes that's not taking their note, but listening to their note and finding that magical third way that makes it better. Because, if someone's going to be giving you a check, you are beholden to them to make sure that you are delivering what the expectation is. And I think so many times I've seen where there's a difference in expectation, and that's when you can get into tricky water. The idea of selling out is so... I don't ever buy that, because I think everyone needs to eat. And the more you write, the better you become as a writer. So there's always valuable lessons and stuff like that. And
right.
And so I don't know. I mean, sometimes you can be writing shit that you just do not want to write. But sometimes it helps you to break through on like, okay, this is an interesting writing challenge or an interesting directing challenge or a producing challenge. And a lot of times what it does is it helps you break through to the next level, or it helps you to take a step back to what you really want to do. And both of those are really valuable. Right. At least happened to me.
Thank you for that. I always love talking about family and kind of what makes us tick and what makes us do the things that we do. When you were growing up with your family, how did they define failure and how did they define success? Do you think that has anything to do with the specific path you chose?
What was really great about my family dynamic was I had a father who worked nonstop and never complained. Right. And it was really great. Like, he would always wake up. I've never seen him not work. And he gave me this really great blueprint of what it meant to be a hard worker. And it's funny because now, even where I am today, I'm like, well, my dad works harder than I do, so what am I complaining about? But the great thing is about my mother is that I remember every day when I went to bed, she'd say, "You're the best. You're number one." And I'd be like, "Okay, settle down." like chill. So like, it was great that I had that, and I had someone who instilled me with confidence. But not only did I have that in words, I saw a really strong example. And I mean, for us, we by no means grew up wealthy. So I think my mom's definition was like of success was someone, you know, you being able to hold your head up high and being able to provide. And my dad was like, as long as you're a hard worker. They didn't understand anything about the film career. My mom even now probably just thinks I'm a weatherman. I think the best thing that my parents did was really hammer in, strive to be your best, know that you are your best, and work your ass off for it. And those were things that I think have really defined my work habits. When they found out how much you could make in the industry, that got them really excited. But at the end of the day, I really lucked out. I never had parents who were like, don't go for it. And I think maybe it's because they just like gave up on me, because my brother was always really business savvy. My sister did a lot of charitable work, and I was always the artist, and they kind of didn't know what to do with that. I remember my dad saying, "I never understood what you did." And he was saying it in his own way. He said, "I never understood what you did, but it was also not my business to understand it. Like, as long as I just kind of let you do your thing." And my dad was a writer. And so I think deep down, we had that connection. Like, he used to write in articles and stuff like that. Nice. He never thought it was really like a life. So I think for me to articulate to him and talk to him or like, "Hey, Dad, look, I wrote that." It's really exciting for him.
Do you think they ever raised you in a way that money was a marker to see your progress?
100%. And the hard thing too is, especially in this industry, people think that everyone's a millionaire or everyone's poor, or people don't understand it's not like another job. And I say this all the time, when you're an artist or when you're a writer or you're in this field or you're an actor, it's not like if I go and I want to become a doctor and let's say I don't do well on my test. A lot of that is not a reflection of who I am and how I see the world, right? It could be, I just had a shitty day. I didn't study. When you're an artist and you write something, or you're an actor and you do something and you put it it out there and so much of it is a part of you and it is perceived as a failure, it'll lay you in bed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so much of it is your own lens on the world. It's really hard. Like, I remember I was, yeah, hey, mom, I wrote this thing. And the first question is like, how much are you getting paid?
Oh, yeah. Oh, same thing. Yep.
Yeah. You can't be like, nothing, but trust me, it's great. They don't understand because for them, it's like, no, no, you go to work and you get a job. And I remember I'm like, mom, I'm doing volunteer work on a film set. And she's like, awesome. How much are you getting paid? You know, like, no, I'm doing, you don't get it. I'm doing volunteer work. And she's like, you don't get it. Right. Like, and so I was like, no, it was a 45 minute conversation where I was like, I'm getting paid $1,000.
I love your mom. I feel like for the Liwa that I know, you're such a fighter. And even if it is a background that they come from and probably culturally too, because it's very similar with mine, a lot of immigrant families and ethnic backgrounds, they very much compare success and happiness with how much you have in your bank account. For me, yes, it did hold me back a little bit because I would start believing like, oh gosh, if I'm not getting paid as much as my family thinks I should be getting paid, then maybe I'm not as good of an actress or whatnot. You know, this is in the past, but it's definitely something that I've had to fight through and breaking down what I was raised with this thinking, even though my family's been very supportive and loving like yours, they still have that mentality where it's like, okay, you just work hard and to see the payoff is through what's in your bank account because that's all they kind of knew. I just wonder for you, you're so strong and I feel like you probably didn't let it get you down. Like you just kind of like push through and you're like, no, even if it is volunteer work, I'm still going to go forth with it. Do you feel like it ever hindered you in a way or?
I don't feel like it hindered me or pushed me forward. What I did sometimes feel was like, okay, well, this is where I'm at in my career. And this must mean that I'm not doing X, Y, and Z.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes, like, yes, yes.
But then I really settled down. And I remember one time I was broke.
Right.
In LA on a visa. My visa was running out. I don't even think it was food. I was eating something. And it was the worst. And I remember calling my mom and I was just like, I'm not doing this shit anymore. I can only work as a writer. I'm spending all this money on immigration and I'm going through all these channels. And she went, you don't quit. You don't quit. And she goes, call me tomorrow.
Wow.
And I was telling her this stuff. So she'd be like, oh, come home and I'll cook for you and I'll take care of you and stuff like that. But it was really great when she said not to. And so that's always good. No, I really lucked out. I really lucked out considering some other people that I know that it's really hard and they have to validate who they are.
Just makes it so much easier and so much more rewarding when your family's fully behind you. And I guess we're both really lucky in that aspect, you know?
Of course.
Talk us through that time when you've gone through a spell of being stuck in a lull. A time that you really encountered failure. And I know just now you're just talking about being really broke, as my mom says, broke like no joke. I mean, you know, I feel like we've all been there as artists. Let us know, take us through that moment where you're like, holy shit, I'm really screwed. And how did you get yourself out of that?
I remember it was 2007, six. There was a show called On the Lot and it was produced by Mark Burnett and Steven Spielberg. It was like a competition show, like an American Idol for filmmakers. And they did this whole global search. And I remember I was working in television. I'd lucked out. I got a job in TV in Canada. And I remember thinking like, oh, I'm going to go apply to this thing. And I applied to it, not thinking I would get anything. And then I remember at work, I got a call from Mark Burnett's company. You know, this guy produced Survivor and everything. And I was like, oh my God. And there was an assistant to my boss. And I was just, and I went up to her and I was like, okay, don't say anything, you know, to our boss. But I just got this call and they're moving me to the second round. And if I win, I get to go to LA. And she's like, oh my God, that's amazing. I won't say anything, I promise. I went back into my office, no joke. 2 minutes later, my boss comes in and she's like, the assistant just told me that you got a call from Mark Burnett's office. And I was like, damn it. And she's like, you have to go and you have to leave. You have to take this opportunity. And I remember the whole office was really behind me. And then Mark Burnett's company called and there was like an online aspect to this show. But I had submitted a short film that I had directed. But it was based on, it was a comic book movie and I didn't have the underlying intellectual property rights. And because of that, they couldn't showcase it. And I was essentially disqualified. I remember being devastated because like 2 months later, I had to walk into work and I was still there and people were like, ugh. And then I remember it airing the first episode and the opening credit sequences going through Universal and, you know, Paramount and the gates opening up and it's like, welcome to LA. And I was living in Edmonton, Alberta. And I just remember feeling like my heart sank. But then with that, I said, I'm going no matter what. It was the saddest moment in my career because I felt, oh my God. But then it was also a opportunity where I thought, well, fuck it, I'm going to go anyways. I booked a ticket the next day.
So there was no moment of pause. There was no moment of you feeling frozen, immobile. If anything, it kicked your ass and kind of fueled the fire even more,
I thought I was on a downward turn for a little because I felt like, okay, I'm getting renewed for this other contract. I was 20 at the time and I was, you know, I was really grateful because I was making great money, had a great title, and I was overseeing a writer's room. And I love what I'm doing, but it doesn't feel like what I'm supposed to be doing. And that's a really interesting thing too, because you can love what you do, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's what you should be doing. You know what I mean? Like, I loved being there, but I felt like this is really great. It could be maybe someone else's version of it. But for me, I wanted to go to the States. I really wanted to try it at that level. And having that failure, because the other thing too is I perceived it as a public failure because so many people were rooting for me. And I remember, like, to the point where even like an ad was taken out to replace me. So yeah, like people had just assumed.
So it's like a huge send-off.
And it wasn't even like you didn't make it, but you're disqualified. And so that was, that was a hard moment for me. I remember once I had pitched something to a studio, and another studio the next, I think it was 3 days later, pitched something with the exact same title and literally the same concept, to the point where my manager and I were like, this is so weird. And we really thought that was going to be the pitch that sold. And so it's really, that stuff is always hard. And you're not getting a financial return. So a lot of times you're really going based on faith. But that happens all the time in this industry. And
did that kind of crush your faith a little bit in humanity? Not to sound so dramatic, but...
All the time. All the time.
Oh, no.
This morning my faith was crushed. You have to upgrade yourself every day. Do you know what I mean? It's like this shitty thing happened. Okay, well, what do I do? Or you look around. And like I was saying earlier, it's not a meritocracy. So a lot of times you see... Well, how the hell did that sell, or that, or wait, I have this idea. But then it's just like, you want to stay in your own lane. You only want to compete with yourself.
Yeah, all that other shit just drags you down, and it just makes you so self-conscious, and it'll make you doubt yourself.
Yeah, and it's an industry that's changing all the time. So what might not work yesterday is the golden ticket tomorrow. You want to adapt as much as possible to the whole process. And a lot of that is listening really closely and ignoring just as much. Do you know what I mean? And it's really about having a relationship with your own intuition.
That's hard, though. Everyone obviously has intuition, and it's how numb you are and how much you've allowed yourself to be muffled by everything around you. That's a skill in itself, where you really have to learn to listen to what it is that your gut is telling you. You always know more than anyone else would.
And cultivating a relationship with your intuition is essential, which means find time to kind of respect it, give yourself some quiet time. I'm horrible for that. When I have nothing to do, I want to do my job. It's funny now, and I've really forced myself to take on hobbies, which has been great.
Wait, so tell me a little bit, what hobbies are these? Because that's funny, because that's something I actually wanted to get into a little bit as well, about balancing work and balancing life. And you just went straight into it. So tell me about these hobbies. How do you make time for yourself and these hobbies?
You know, it's really funny. I forced myself to buy a guitar.
Oh, nice.
So I've been playing guitar for the past year. It's funny. I kind of make everything work. Like, I decided this year is going to be my playing guitar writing. And what I want to do is really challenge myself. So I'm going to perform in a show. So I had my first, almost like an acoustic show a couple years ago. And then the next year was I want to paint. So then I was like, I want to try to get something in a gallery. And I was lucky to have some of the painting that I did get featured. What it allows me to do is have another creative endeavor. I'm a big comic book nerd. I find boot camp classes where I can just exercise because I feel like it gets me out of my own head. By the time I get home, I'm just so tired. I love watching movies too.
Do you feel like it's necessary as a writer to watch a lot of movies, especially if they're interested in writing their own movies, writing their own stories, or writing for a TV show? Do you recommend that it's crucial to learn?
It's absolutely necessary. I guest speak at a film school.
Of course you do. What don't you do?
No, but it's really interesting because I'll have people come in and be like, wow, you know, you have these credits. And I was just like, yeah. And I'm like, who's a writer here? And if you want to be a writer, you have to read a script a week. You have to watch 2 movies a week. You're in an industry where you have to sell, and you're in a community of people who are experts. And to walk in and not have the touchstones, you know, of some of the great movies, it's such a disservice to you. If I'm an athlete, I am playing football every day. When you make this your career, it has to be your career.
Like, so you have to surround yourself.
Surround yourself. You have to become a student of the craft and of the history and of every book. I mean, I wake up I go to my job, work 12 hours, 8 hours, 10 hours, 14 hours. But when I'm in my car, I'm listening to a writing podcast. When I'm on my lunch, I'm sending emails, touching base with my team. I come home, I write. It is my life. To answer your question about how do you balance that, I haven't always been the best with that. I've been so fortunate, though, that I have amazing friends, and I am very lucky to be able to turn my brain off, and I know that I'll have somebody. I have the greatest relationship. I'm very blessed to be in a loving relationship with someone who I could really just download all of my insecurities and feel like I'm protected and nurtured. And that's always important to have. A lot of times when you're working on something, like I know if I'm ever in a script and I'm just in the shit of it, and if it's not your partner, it's your friend or a confidant or whatever, but you really want to have people that have the bird's eye view of who you are in your career and could see the pattern. I was calling one of my best friends, was like, you felt these, like I'm writing a script right now, and I was like, I'm fucking terrible. And they're like, this is a part of the process. You said that last time. And it's the script you love the most now. And sometimes you want that person who sees the highest version of you.
Yes.
And a lot of times just having that is reassuring. Look, everyone says you don't want yes men. And you sometimes want one. Like you want that person who's going to tell you your shit all the time. You want that right. one person who's going to tell you you're amazing all the time. You want the one person who's just going to listen and not say shit at all. And it's important to know that you just have a team, a support team around you. And, you know, and finding that in your partner, finding that in your best friend, finding that in your agents, managers, lawyers, all those people, it's really important. And also, like, I had to actively seek other hobbies because film had been mine for so long. And when it became a career, I didn't have anything. So just go find your other hobbies.
What is one proudest moment in your career?
It's not what you would think. I have been blessed to be sitting in a movie theater and, you know, having my name written by. And I know even getting into the Disney ABC writing program, there are thousands of people who apply to that. And to win a spot in that was incredible. And I'm so blessed. But I think if you ask me the time where I thought, oh my God, I feel the most proud, was I had written a script. It was essentially The Princess Bride. It centered on this kid who had leukemia, who was kind of losing hope. And his dad, who was a really successful ad agency, had to sell the kid on hope. Because they're saying if this kid loses his hope, that he's pretty much a goner. The dad had to collect all this little kid's comic books. And really, the pitch of the story was that he took all of his comic books and the things that were most precious to this little boy and weaved this story about this father and son in this magical place who had to go and actually find hope by killing this ghost, which was a metaphor for his cancer and something that could spread. It was really a story about a father coming to terms with his son's mortality. It was this big fantasy film, and it was hard because it was dealing with cancer. This is before, like, Fault in Our Stars and, like, all these movies were. Cancer. Right. And I remember with the production company of one of my favorite movies, which was Children of Men, and one of the executives called my agent crying in a coffee shop. And she said, I'm crying hysterically in a coffee shop. I want to meet this person. So, and I met, and that was amazing. And then I remember, oh, wow, this might sell. And it didn't, because I think it was a studio at the time that just said, look, it's $100 million movie. And the moment that I'm talking about specifically is I got called into Overbrook, which is Will Smith's company. And I was meeting with one of their executives on this script. And I remember I walked in and I was like, wow, this is really cool. This is Overbrook. It's, you know, Will Smith's company. And I could see these two people who were looking at me, and they kept looking at me. And then the executive was running a little late. And so I went in and I had this meeting with this executive, and she was fantastic and being really complimentary. And she said, do you mind if I bring two of the assistants into this meeting because they read your script and they really would like to meet you?
Wow.
And I just remember thinking, like, you know, why would anyone, like, why me? And she's like, it was really funny because when you were sitting down, the assistants were calling her saying, don't make him wait, don't make him wait. And it was this really surreal experience that I had where this person came in and he's like, yeah, my brother had cancer. Funny thing is, these guys walked in, they were like 6'4", stacked. I remember leaving that meeting and thinking, like, I had this idea that I wanted to sell this project and make this movie, but I really, whatever I wrote, I had connected with these people. And sometimes you actually do lose sight of that. You think, oh, when this project becomes realized and when people around the world can go and see it, but it's just like, or when you're a screenwriter, you think it's the only way that people are going to really be able to experience it. But it's just like, that was really a proud moment, because I thought, if this movie gets made or not,
you touched lives already.
That it spoke to someone's experience. experience. And that was just, it was one of those like, you know what? I'm okay. If this doesn't sell, I'm okay.
Yeah.
And it was a really surreal experience. And working on Goldberg's, a plot point that I pitched or a joke you're seeing yourself, so many people are contributing to an idea, and to know that you're a part of a team that you come home and if it's on the air, you'd be like, oh, wow. Or I remember I pitched like an anecdote that was about my life. And one of those stories was in one of the episodes.
Yeah. Your words that were spoken were respected and acknowledged.
Yeah. And it's, and that's a testament to everyone who I work with, who's so great.
Do you have any advice that you can pass on to our listeners?
I have a bunch.
Spit it out.
I remember I was sitting in class and somebody said, look to your left. Half of you guys will never make it.
Wow.
And I just remember, like, that's such a pompous attitude. Like, anybody can make it. You just put in the work. Like, that's really all what it comes to. I really have to remind myself of this. Your job is not to decide the timeline. Your job is to put in the time.
Love
it
that.
Will sort itself out. But just put in the time and understand your craft. Really be a student. A lot of people think it's all artsy fartsy, and you have to look at it like you're going to medical school. I look at things, it's like, okay, this year is my medical residency. I'm going to learn as much as I can. I'm going to learn all this stuff. And I'm going to put myself in a position to be an expert as much as I can. And that's reading as many books, watching as many movies, but don't forget to do the work on yourself. That's so crucial too, especially if you're going to be an artist. If you want to be an artist, go into therapy, like really, as a way to give yourself the tools to acknowledge actions, why you're doing stuff, because that's what your job is, right? So anything that could equip you with knowing yourself better is really going to help. Especially movies, it's a world of subtext and what's happening behind an action. And so I think the most important things are gamble on yourself. That is crucial. Mm-hmm. Take big risks. Leap and the net will appear. The second big piece of advice I would give you is be kind to everyone, because nobody wants to work with an asshole. And you hear that all the time. But like, I've seen it for myself where more talented people have not gotten a job because they're just difficult. And at the end of the day, everyone's mm-hmm. a person, and they want to know that if it's 2 a.m, that they're going to enjoy the person that they're going to be hanging out with. Be kind and generous with your information and stop competing with other people. I think in my youth too, I always felt that there was this sense of competition. It's like, it's not, that's a complete fallacy. You are so specific to what you have to offer. And so hone that, hone your specificity, hone your voice. You're competing with yourself. Like, it's one lane. Stop worrying about anyone else and surround yourself with mentors.
Yeah, that's really important, you recommend, yeah?
Yeah, of course. Because a lot of times if people have already cleared the path for you in a lot of ways. Like, I've been really fortunate to have people in my life. I just came back from a dinner with a friend who's really, really quite established. And I mean, he was like, even he said today, like, anyone trying to wrestle their way to this commercial world of writing, you know, where you're one of the big five, it's like, it's bullshit. Go do your own thing. That is what will get people talking.
Yeah, create your own.
Create your own material and create your own content. And this happens with actors all the time too. And it drives me crazy. It's like, they're waiting for the next audition. It's like, you know, there was a movie at Sundance that was in competition that was shot on an iPhone 5. It's just like, there's no reason. Get a YouTube channel. Put your stuff up there. You know, and everyone's like, well, it must be really awesome to be in a writer's room where there's so many talented people. It's like, yeah, it's amazing. I'm a better writer for it. But go start a writer's room yourselves. Like, go get a bunch of people and start a writer's group. Gotta be able to create your own dynamics. Like I said before, you want to gamble on yourself. Leap first. Then find the net, because a lot of times I find that's how it works.
Thank you for all those amazing tips. I feel like you are so great at attracting really successful people in their careers and in their personal lives. For those who don't have that big of a network or access to mentors, how do you advise that they can find mentors for themselves? Perhaps you can share a little bit about how you developed your relationships with your mentors.
I think if you're in an area where you don't have a lot of things, YouTube is great. I mean, I watch all the Inside the Actor Studios or the roundtables, and it's just like any environment where these people that I admire were speaking, or like, you know, the BAFTA screenwriting lessons or anything like that was really helpful for me, because I was able to mine their experience and thought, okay, well, what is the connective tissue between all of these successful people? In terms of finding mentors, I went to a lot of seminars, and people think, you know, sometimes a mentor, they don't necessarily have to be famous. They don't even necessarily have to be in your field. You know, a lot of times, like I said, like my dad, like someone who just didn't complain and worked was such a mentor to me, because yeah. He gave me a work language. But for me, I can confidently say that, you know, I really lucked out with people who are real heavy hitters in the industry who have looked as a mentor, and I never approached them with, hey, teach me. I connected with them as people. And that was really important for me. And I think a lot of times, you know, you have to remember these people get accosted all the time. The person who has 8 Academy Awards might not be the best mentor for you, you know? So you want to make sure that you're connecting with someone on a personal level. They get you, you get them. They're hearing, they're seeing what you're doing and what you want to do. That is the best mentor, someone who understands you and you understand them. And so connect on a personal level and then hopefully you see where that goes. But I think it's important to reach out to people. I think it's necessary to reach out to people. And I've always, I mean, I definitely think you want to pay it forward. It's why I always go back to a special guest, or it's why I give my information out whenever I'm meeting someone in person.
How important do you think it is to share your vision and goals with people around you to kind of put it out in the universe?
100%. And I think it's really defining what it is you want. A lot of times people think putting it out there is like running in the street and screaming. And sometimes that works. And I find that for me, really putting it out there is calling my close friends and saying, this is what I want to do. This is what I'm putting out there. This is what my intention is. And a lot of times it's having them hold you accountable. And then what I do is have a game plan. So I verbalize what I'm hoping to put out into the universe or into the world. And then I immediately go into, okay, what are my action steps to do that? And that is a really great thing, because I think it's a really good relationship between having faith. You know, there's a lot of exciting things that I'm looking forward to in my career. And a lot of it is knowing that I don't have a ton of control. But at least when I have an action plan, it makes me feel like I am contributing to the vision.
Can you walk us a little bit through how you go about your action plans?
For sure. Whenever I'm writing a screenplay, what I'll do is I'll have a daily goal. So like, I want to hit this goal today. I want to write this. I'll do a follow-up. There's a lot of things that kind of hit the back burner. So I'll definitely try to follow up, especially when you have agents and managers and stuff like that. It's still your responsibility to run that ship. You know, a lot of times people just wait for your management. I don't do that. If it comes to a specific goal that I want, if it's me getting the rights to a paper, my action plan would literally be like research author of paper, research who owns the underlying rights, call somebody, create a pitch document. Like, I'll really go through that process. Like, for example, one would be like, I'd really love to make a movie about an inspiring person who has changed the world. That's the type of projects I want to make. Well, an action plan would be like, okay, we'll start researching that.
Yeah, like an actual checklist that you can get back.
Yeah, and I definitely make a checklist, and I try to hold myself as accountable as possible, because then it's a tangible way of me looking at process, and I think that's a really important thing. And I'm somebody who likes working on multiple projects at one time. I think it really helps me. I don't necessarily believe in writer's block. I don't personally believe in that. I think it's just people, there's sometimes a hesitation to write crap. Everyone writes crap. You have to write crap.
You just have to put it out there.
You have to put it out there. Yeah. Your first drafts usually never stick anyway, so might as well just get it out there. Mm-hmm. Completely rewrite it.
What are small, manageable steps you'd advise these writers to take every week towards accomplishing their goals? Whether it's landing a writing agent, a representative, finishing a script, what do you advise for them?
Let's say, for example, if you're in LA, you can go to the Writers Guild Foundation, which is a library where you can read up-to-date scripts. So what I would suggest is read at least 1 to 2 scripts a week. I would also have a writing game plan. If it's write 5 pages a day, 3 pages a day, but give yourself something like a daily target, because what you really want to start developing are habits, writing habits. So if I go 2 days without writing, I'll actually feel weird because I've formulated a habit.
You've trained yourself.
I've trained myself to do that. So you want to train yourself to have the best habits as possible. And you really want to get out there and network with people who are at your level as well. You want to create a tribe of people that are like-minded, that can help. And I'm a firm believer in your own content creation. Try making a 3-minute video. You'll learn so much when you've written something and you put it up on its feet. So any way that you can do that, even if you're just shooting something on your iPhone and it's a monologue that you record you doing or your actor friend doing, being able to see it helps you a lot.
And what about those who are looking for representation?
The thing is let representation look for you based on the material you create.
Okay. For example, like you were just talking about putting up a monologue piece that you wrote yourself, or 3-minute.
Do a short film. Like for me, what happened, I remember when I had my agent, I had a general and they're like, look, where I was in my career, it was really hard to have a big agency kind of scoop me up. But then I was like, okay, well, I hear that. I'm going to go keep pursuing my thing. I started writing pilots. I got generals. I got into the program. I got staff on a show. I was doing a bunch of things. And that agent was like, great, now we can do this and let's move forward. I'm a firm believer that you kind of dance with the person who brought you to the ball. So I look for those relationships. So you want to have people who believe in you. You know, a lot of people are like, well, I'm an artist. I'm not business savvy. It's like, that's the kiss of death. Start looking at the Writers Guild of America's contracts and and or the Producers Guild, like all of those things, try to get, just make yourself as knowledgeable as possible about the career that you're in.
I love that. That is so helpful. And I know our listeners can walk away with so many tidbits thanks to you, Liwa.
And they can tweet me if they have anything.
Well, let us know. Where can they find you? I'm going to have your information on your show notes page. Where are you at for Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, anything? Let us know.
So it's at Liwa Nass, which is LEWAANASS. That's my, I think, Instagram as well. And then my Facebook is just my name. I think there's only one of me. Essentially, if you just hit your keyboard, I will show up. Like if you hit enough vowels, it's LEWAANASSERDE. And yeah, I look forward, anyone has any questions or if there's anything that I can do, I would love to.
That's amazing. Let's wrap it up with the very last question. Okay. What are some recommended books that you think that our listeners should check out?
Robert McKee's story, it's a slog to get through. I mean, I do think it's great. It is really great. I think if you're looking for something that helps to put it in a more contemporary context, I think Blake Snyder's Save the Cat is awesome. Another book that I would recommend is Christine Vachon. She wrote Shooting to Kill. She's an independent producer. Her production company is Killer Films. So they did Boys Don't Cry, Happiness, Velvet Goldmine. And I'm reading her book and it's really great because it really shows an independent producer's experience through getting materials and producing materials. So I really like that. The other thing too is there are a ton of podcasts you can listen to. I mean, there's Script Notes, and that's John August and Craig Mazin's podcast about writing. I mean, there's so much. I would read everything, honestly.
Yeah.
But I would also write. A lot of times, if you have one of these books, use them as an inspirational tool to start writing. A lot of times you can get into analysis paralysis where you're just reading and reading and reading and reading and reading without writing. One of the best experiences I ever had writing is when I had no idea of the structure and it was the first thing I'd done. And I think why people responded to it is because it had the energy of excitement and not like, oh, I have to hit this on this page or this on this and this needs to be satisfied here. And so, yeah, that's what I would suggest. And just believe in yourself. I mean, I know it's cheesy. But at the end of the day, you're in an industry where you're going to hear no a lot. So you really have to develop that part of you that's your own cheerleader that really helps to motivate you. Sometimes that's you. Sometimes that's your friend. Sometimes it's calling and just saying, look, I need a pep talk. Have those people in your life. They're necessary.
Yeah, absolutely. You gave us so many amazing actionable tips and really inspiring words as well. We are so lucky to have you with us. So thank you for being an awesome guest.
I'm lucky to have you and thank you for bringing me on. I'm really excited for you. And again, thank you for having me.
Hey, Storyteller Tribe, thank you so much for joining me today. How generous was Liwa to break down the process of everything? I hope this episode gave you a ton of inspiration to apply towards your work as a creative artist. Like Liwa mentioned, you can find him on Twitter and Instagram at Liwa Nass. That's LEWAANASS. Please head over and say hi. For links to all of the books and podcasts that were brought up in Liwa's interview, head over to Liwa's show notes page at 88cupsoftea.com/podcast/Liwa Nassardeen. That's LEWAANASSERDEEN. Let me know what you thought about this episode by heading over to Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram and find me at 88 Cups of Tea. And last but not least, if you connected to this interview in any way, please help me leave a rating and review for my podcast. It means so much to me to be able to share my interviews with you. Ratings and reviews on my podcast iTunes page helps a lot in spreading the word about the podcast. The more ratings and reviews I receive, the more you're helping with the ranking of my show. That means there's a higher chance of my podcast being found and subscribed to, and that would mean the world to me. To leave a review, launch Apple's podcast app, tap on the search button, enter 88 Cups of Tea, then after you see my podcast album art, tap on the reviews button in the middle. Be sure to sign into the iTunes store by logging in with your password, then tap the stars to leave a rating, and then finally, enter the title and then the content. Thank you so much in advance for helping me out and leaving me a review and rating. I appreciate your guys' support so much, and I'm so excited to be on this journey with you.
Hey guys, it's me again. Thanks so much for listening in on 88 Cups of Tea. Go create something magical today, and I'll catch you in the next episode. Bye.